Yeah, what's going on, guys? I'm here. Welcome to a brand new episode of Tariq Radio. I am your gracious host. My name is Mr. Tariq Nasheed. Glad to have everybody tuning in, folks. I need y'all to hit that like button, hit that thumbs up button, hit that subscribe button. Ladies and gentlemen, let folks know that we're in here. We're going to have a very good conversation on tonight's broadcast. What we're going to do while you guys are piling in the room, let's take one of those quick commercial breaks, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be right back right here on Tariq Radio. So don't you move a muscle.
Listen up, squares. You need to get the legendary book on game, The Art of Mackin, by author Tariq King Flex Nasheed. Available on Amazon right now. Can you dig it? This book has been a bestseller for 20 years, Jack. And the New York Times called it a classic. That means it's out of sight. So this book ain't for no lames who ain't trying to learn the game. Jive turkeys. So if you're ready to stop slacking in your mackin', get The Art of Mackin' book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble right now, sucker. Rated PG. That stands for plenty of game, jive chumps.
Are you looking to start your own business? Millions of brothers have turned to eBay to escape the rat race. Become your own boss and get the Power Seller Research eBook. It's a comprehensive, step-by-step guide that explains how to start an eBay business. The website is powersellerresearch.com. Again, that's powersellerresearch.com.
What's up, family? You guys need to check out this cookie company out of Houston, Texas called The Cookie Confidant. Man, they sell these beautiful, delicious, huge cookies right out of Houston, Texas, man. And the brother has been in business since 2017. And I've tried these cookies, man. They are bomb, bomb, bomb. Very delicious. My personal favorite are the chocolate chip pecan cookies, man. They are bomb. Y'all need to go to cookieconfidant.com. to get these cookies. Black-owned company, man. They got chocolate chip peanut butter cookies, white chocolate cookies with sprinkles, man. So anything you like in a cookie, they got it. So again, go to cookieconfidant.com. That's cookieconfidant.com. Listen, are you ashy as hell? Do you have dry, parched skin? Does your elbows look like elephant knees? If so, you want to get your skin from crusty to lovely. Go to ashkicking.com to get all the lotions, lubricants, and body butters that you need to get your skin in order. They got all types of health and beauty products, everything you need. They got incense, things to make your house smell good, things to make you smell good. So again, go to ashkicking.com. Again, that's ashkicking.com. Do you have a small business or you want to start your own business, or do you need business development? If so, you need to holler at my guy, Junius James at Junius James Incorporated. He has a nonprofit organization in Milwaukee that specializes in empowering the black community. With 17 years as a vice president in corporate America and 11 years in staffing agency ownership, he has developed various programs that will help you right now. Visit juniusjames.org. That's juniusjames.org, or call 1-855-JUNIUS-JAMES. That's 855-586-4875.
Bro, stop playing and start spraying. Leave a op on the ground where you stand. At all costs, yeah, make sure you protect it. Old goon juice, the formula been tested. You can defend yourself if you find that you need a little help. Gotta stay ready, ain't no love in the street. Pepper spray straight to the face, make them get weak. Get it at oldgoonjuice.com. If they thinking you slipping, then tell them to come get them some. If you packing this, you won't be lacking. A shot to the eye in them problems you having. Maximal strip, hit them haters on ground. So you can feel free when you out in the town. Old goon juice, and don't forget a shirt, man. You gotta stay ready, that evil on lurk. Yeah.
You are now tuned in to the incredible, to the legendary Tariq Nasheed. On Tariq Radio.
Donkey.
Oh, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have y'all tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, to Tariq Radio. Everybody who's listening live, I'm going to need you to subscribe. Oh, ooh, come on. Subscribe. Subscribe. Come on, you got to subscribe. You got to subscribe. Hit the button, subscribe. You got to subscribe. Everybody, goddammit, you got to subscribe. I got to bust something on this. Hold on. We in here. Hold on. I'm feeling this. Hold on. Can I bust something? Hold on. Pull up to the spot trying to get some paper. Looking in the rear view, spot some haters. I gotta duck and dodge cause they trying to get that. Pull up to the store, I gotta get a Kit Kat. Get some beef jerky and a Slurpee. You gotta watch your back cause the streets are thirsty. Always been down, you can check my rap sheet. Don't fuck with bitches whose knees are ashy. Yeah, come on. Do I need to bust? Anyway, look, we're here. Man, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. First of all, I hope you guys got the book, Foundational Black American Race Baiter. I hope everybody got the book, Foundational Black American Race Baiter, ladies and gentlemen, on Amazon right now. And we are going to still have some autographed copies coming soon, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to have some autographed copies coming soon, ladies and gentlemen. Listen. Foundational Black American Race Baiter is that book. Y'all gotta get that book, man. Phenomenal book, man. This is the best book of the year. Phenomenal book, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all better get that book. And it's a great Christmas gift. It's a great Kwanzaa gift. It's a great holiday gift. It's a great gift, ladies and gentlemen. It's a wonderful, phenomenal gift that you guys need to get for your family. Man. A lot of stuff we got to talk about on tonight's show. And I'm going to take some calls later. I do that. I'm going to take some calls a little bit later. But let's talk about a few things. Somebody said they're reading the book now. Yes, man, very phenomenal book. I poured my heart and my soul in this book. Somebody said, can I do a book signing? You know what? I might have to do that. If I do that, it would be down in Atlanta somewhere. It would be down in Atlanta. So we got to look into that. And, you know, with the COVID stuff. Speaking of COVID, we're filming this weekend for the new documentary film that I'm producing. And boy, it's a lot of stuff we got to get to film in L.A., man. Golly. Man, we got to go through. We got COVID officers and all this stuff we have to hire. And, you know, it's a whole thing, man. It is a whole thing, dude. But it is what it is. That's part of the game. That is part of the game. But did y'all know infamous feminist Bell Hooks died? Bell Hooks, a very infamous black feminist, and I use feminist in quotes because a lot of these sisters, y'all not really feminists. If you're a victim of white supremacy, you're just a victim of white supremacy. Feminism, that kind of implies that you are some kind on some equal standing with white women, and you're not. Yeah, that's why I use the word feminism very loosely, because that implies that these women who claim feminism are somehow on an equal level with these white women who they try to buddy up with, because that's what it is at the end of the day. It's them trying to be buddy-buddy and form some coalition with these white women that has never materialized. But they've used Bell Hooks. She's been a bulldozer for black to run over black males. They would use her as their battering ram to attack black males. That thing started big in the 70s with that Michelle Wallace, that whole Black Macho book that came out in the 70s, where they're talking about black men and this black male patriarchy that doesn't exist and all of this nonsense. We touched on that in the Buck Breaking movie. But what's interesting, Bell Hooks has been used in a lot of these talking points. And I want y'all to really watch Buck Breaking. If you have not seen Buck Breaking, go to buckbreakingmovie.com. We talked about how those white supremacist feminist talking points were facilitated through the Bell Hooks and the Michelle Wallaces, and eventually mainstreamed by Oprah. You know, they were the ones who helped push those talking points, and they gave them to Oprah, and Oprah pushed those feminist talking points to a wider audience. And it's not coincidental that the movie Oprah was in, The Color Purple, that was one of the more modern movies that facilitated this, the modern anti-black male wave in cinema. You know, in the 70s, you know, there was the whole blaxploitation era where we were trying to, you know, kind of take control of our image or move our image to another direction, even though it became cartoonish within itself. But then when the 80s came back around, and The Color Purple came out, that was a very horrible movie as far as the way it projected and portrayed black males. It portrayed black men in a very horrible light. It portrayed black men as abusive monsters, and this is what the white supremacists, they get behind stuff like that, and they'll signal boost that very far and wide. So this woman has been used by the dominant society for many, many years to attack black people, black families. And understand, when they send these black feminists out here to attack black men, it's really an attack on the black family. That's what it's really about. It's really attacking the black family, because that's their whole thing. We don't need a patriarchal family. We don't need a male-led family. You know, it's sowing dissension within black men and black women. And how has that worked out for us? Let's just look at the results. The results speak for themselves. How has all of that gender dividing and all of that we don't need each other nonsense, how has that worked for black society? Look at us right now. We are a mess in relation to other groups and their family structure. You understand? Our family structures were infiltrated, and a con game was run on us. And bell hooks and those people, they were the main perpetrators alongside with the white supremacists. And what's interesting, bell hooks has died, and most people didn't even know. I didn't even see her name trend. And that's, ain't that sad? Ain't that kind of tragic? I didn't even see bell hooks' name trend. None this week. I haven't seen her name trend after she died. Nobody, it seemed like nobody really cared. The white people who she carried water for so many years, they didn't really care. She was just a useful tool. But the, you see, you carry water for white people all of these years, and you die and nothing. They don't even care. That's why being a patsy and a mule for the dominant society, that don't work. That don't work at all. You did all that and you quietly died, and no fanfare, no nothing. Family, that's not how you're supposed to live. See, if you go out, man, your name is supposed to ring. When you go out, man, you're supposed to leave a legacy, especially if you're a black person. You're supposed to leave a legacy of empowerment. That's the name of the game. Because when you leave a legacy of empowerment, you don't die. People like Dr. King, people like Malcolm X. That's why Malcolm is alive now. That's why his name is all over the place. Because of us, not the dominant society. Malcolm X's name is ringing because of us. He rode for black society. And he put his life on the line for black society. So we ride for him. So we keep Malcolm alive. Malcolm is in us. See, this is that black messiah that they talk about. They don't want that black messiah. See, they have to be very careful about taking out prominent black people who go against white supremacy, blatantly taking them out. Because what happens is when you martyr them, you create a million Malcolms. And they don't want that. You see, when you take out a Dr. King, you create a million other Dr. Kings. So you got to be very careful about that. You understand? So they have to do things in more nefarious ways to make it seem like, well, they had an accident, or they died because of some mysterious cause, or some other hate nigga took him out. Just like with Nipsey, they have to make it seem like his murder was just the work of an angry hating gangbanger. Nah, it was deeper than that. Much more deeper than that. You understand? So we gotta, you have to have that spirit of revolution where your legacy and your name means something. You have to be a rider. You have to be the kind of person who stands up against injustice, because that spirit doesn't die, because that's a righteous spirit. That is a righteous spirit to have. Because I want y'all to understand, the dominant society, they elevate their revolutionaries. The white supremacists, see, they have their revolutionaries too. They have their martyrs too. They have their people who take one for the team. This is why they elevate them and prop them up. They're big on that, propping up their people who take one for the team. You understand what I'm saying? Case in point, right here. This is y'all boy, Killer Kyle. He's speaking at Turning Point USA. They got him doing paid speaking gigs. They're promoting this guy, Turning Point USA, the white supremacist organization. They've been caught doing so many white supremacist deeds. Old Charlie, suspected white supremacist Kirk. Oh yeah, the white supremacists are embracing and elevating this guy. Look at it. This is how they do their revolutionary. See, Kyle, he was a revolutionary for the white supremacists. This is why they uphold their revolutionaries. You understand? And the picture should look like this. This is what the picture should really look like, because he's a little bitch, a little old punk ass, cowardly, sneaky, groveling bitch who needed a system of non-justice to elevate him. But they don't mind being little bitches. The white supremacists have no shame. They don't mind being little old punk bitches. They'll flip the narrative later. They'll be the punk bitches they are in the moment, but then they'll flip the narrative later. They have no problem. They have no problem. But I was talking to somebody the other day. We're talking about, I did a live on Twitter, and Twitter is kind of messing with my spaces. I tried to do one earlier and they just cut me off and then wouldn't let the playback go through. But I was on Twitter space the other day and some suspected white supremacist called up and I debate them, and he was saying something about how we're talking about Killer Kyle, and he was talking about, you know, they were doing their splaining. I was talking about all of the Kyle Rittenhouse effects after the killing he did, and he was elevated into hero status. That's creating a whole bunch of other little Killer Kyles. That's why ever since he was acquitted, almost every other day we're seeing a story about another school shooting being thwarted or about to go through. Them elevating Kyle Rittenhouse, see, this is a double-edged sword. They're elevating this guy, but then this is encouraging other little suspected white supremacists to do the same thing. That's a horrible message to send. That is a horrible message. Hey, if you get out here and you have some issues as a teenager and you go shoot up people, you could possibly be a hero like Kyle. And the thing is, it's affecting their community. And the dude who called me up, he was like, well, yeah, this whole thing was, school shootings are relatively new. It really started with Columbine. And, you know, the kids are depressed and mental illness. Oh, don't stop with all that mental illness stuff. It's not really white supremacy. His whole theory was it's not white supremacy. That's their whole thing, trying to deny white supremacy. Let me tell you, the root of all of this stuff is white supremacy. The root of it is white supremacy, because the thing is with these guys who go out here and do these school shootings, it's like they know, okay, I'm not going to get punished. They're not going to kill me. See, part of white supremacy is being able to kill people with a certain level of impunity. Even if you're very guilty for shooting or killing somebody, you might get a slap on the wrist, or you're not going to get you won't get killed yourself, or you won't get really punished. You're not going to get executed. If you're a white person and generally you go out here killing people, you have an understanding that the dominant society is going to ride for you in a certain degree. They're going to give you the benefit of the doubt. They're going to splain for you, especially if you kill a black person. Now, if you kill a black person, you could really get away with it. But the thing is, you better catch a black person who can't clap back on you. And see, that's the thing with Kyle. See, with Kyle, many people believe that he was trying to get black people. If you look at the video of what happened that night, he was approaching black people. they saw past him. They saw the game he was trying to play, so they didn't allow themselves to get ambushed by them, by Kyle. But the white dudes kind of jumped in trying to save the brothers, and they got ambushed. So the white supremacists are good. They're fine with the proxy shooting. The white guys who got shot, they were proxies for black people. But the whole thing about these school shootings, these white kids, number one, the fact that they have so much easy access to legal guns, almost all of them, they got their guns from their parents. Almost every single case, their parents bought them a damn gun and they were underage, and nothing ever happens to the parent. Only recently, that kid out there in Michigan, they went after his parents for buying his ass a gun and him going shooting up the damn school. Only recently they did that. But remember, all of these years, they never go after the parents who do this stuff. You understand? But the underlying thing is, oh, I'm white and I have certain benefits and privileges. My whiteness is next to godliness. And God has the ability to give life or take life. And as a white supremacist, we have that same godlike quality. We can kill people. We can take a life. We can kill another human being. And we will not be punished, or we will be punished less severely. See, that's a very integral part of white supremacist culture, being able to kill with impunity. This is why whenever you see a lot of these white school shooters, they always have some kind of white supremacist ideology that they believe in. When you start looking at their social media, it's always some alt-right, Klan, skinhead, Aryan Nation, sometimes even obscure little white supremacist ideologies, but that's always the underlying thing there. Even with Columbine, we know what happened with Columbine. Those were a bunch of little white supremacists doing that. And don't think that these school shootings started with Columbine. The modern school shootings actually started in the 70s, the modern wave. There was an infamous one, I think, in 1989, where this white supremacist shot up a school out here in California. And I think he shot up, it was some Asian kids he targeted. It was some dark-skinned Asians he targeted. And I think Janet Jackson named her album after that situation. And where are my Janet Jackson fans in here? If I'm my memory serves me right. In 89, what was Janet Jackson's album in 89? I forgot what it was, but I think Janet Jackson named her album after the situation, something like that. I forgot what it is, but I know there was a shooting out here in 89 by a white supremacist. And I know we got some Janet fans in here. Where are my Janet fans? Help me. I'm having a brain fart about what the name of that album was. It was in Stockton, California, right? And the dude, I remember he shot some Asian cats. It was some Asian kids he shot. But the name of Rhythm Nation? Somebody said Control. No, nigga, it wasn't Control, brother. You just saying anything. No, it wasn't the Velvet Rope either. No, was it Rhythm? Okay. Somebody said they were a baby in 1989. Okay. Was it Rhythm Nation? I don't know. Rhythm Nation was 89. Okay. It was something about Janet Jackson made a dedication. But I say that to say this. That really started happening. The modern random school shootings, meaning that these kids just show up to a school and just start shooting randomly at just indiscriminately. Because, see, back during Jim Crow, they would target black people. We all know that. But this whole phenomenon where they would just start shooting up random schools really started in 1979. It was a white girl in San Diego. Now, 1979, that was a year after 78, right after the Turner Diaries came out. Let's be clear. The Turner Diaries, that book was that's the Bible of the modern white supremacist, white nationalist movement. That book was the Bible of that. That's why a lot of these cases, Timothy McVeigh, when he blew up the building in Oklahoma in 1995, he had a copy of the damn Turner Diaries in his truck. And that book talked about blowing up federal buildings. That book talked about infiltrating law enforcement, which is what they did. That's exactly what they did. It talked about being lone wolves and doing all of these guerrilla tactics, bringing down society for the white supremacist agenda. They talk about exterminating black people and turning Southern California into this white supremacist enclave where there are no black people. In fact, I think part of the book talked about, and the book is based on fiction, but it's a how-to manual too. The book talked about for other members to be able to get into one of these white supremacist compounds, their entrance fee is basically they have to have the severed head of a black person. It was some heavy stuff in this book. So yeah, in 1979, a white girl out here in Southern California, right after the Turner Diaries came out, a white girl named Brenda Spencer, 16 years old, got a gun from her parents, and she lived across the street from the school. One Monday morning, she woke up and just started bucking at the school, shooting at the school. I think she killed two teachers, injured many other students. And they asked this little old demonic mayonnaise monster. They said, "Girl, Brenda, what the hell? Brenda, why did you shoot at a school? Why did you do that?" And her infamous answer was, "I did it because I hate Mondays." That was her answer. That became a very infamous story during the time. I hate Mondays. If you look up the I Hate Monday killer, you'll see her. In fact, there was a song released after that by a group. I forgot the name of the group, but they had a song in 1979, I Hate Mondays, based on that shooting spree in San Diego in 1979. On the song Jam, Janet Jackson talks about the shooting on the song Jams. Okay. Yeah, but the white girl was like, I just shot motherfuckers because I hate Mondays. Yeah, I'm white and I hate Mondays. Shit. That's the only reason I need. I hate Mondays. It was boring. Basically, she was saying I was bored. Mondays are boring, so I just wanted a little action. Somebody said the song, the Janet Jackson song, was State of the World by Janet. Okay, State of the World. That's the name of the song. Okay. So, yeah, these white supremacist shootings, or suspected white supremacist shootings, they've been going on for a minute. And again, that's the underlying theme of it. Yeah. Somebody said Mondays is a slang for black people, too. Yeah. Yeah. It's heavy. It is heavy. But we have to understand what we're dealing with. They'll take one for the team doing these white supremacist killings. We look down on it, but in white supremacist culture, they low key look at these people as heroes, man. That's why with Kyle, they're parading this guy around. This is a weenie, but they're parading this guy around because that's their hero. You see, we glorify niggas who do dumb shit. When niggas go out here and shoot up the block and all that, you niggas glorify that goofy nonsense. Dusty niggas have no legacy. Just understand that part of the game. Dusty niggas have no legacy. And clapping at other black folks, you understand? Having all that rah-rah energy for the black folks, that's dusty by definition. But you ain't got no smoke and no energy for the people who's really oppressing you. Real heavy. But family, let's talk about what we're going to talk about on today's broadcast. For real, for real. I'm talking about rearranging the rules. That's what we're talking about on today's broadcast. How the dominant society likes to rearrange the rules when the rules start benefiting black people. When we, as black people, we start doing things that benefit us, the dominant society goes on alert heavy. They immediately go on alert. Now, in sports, and I'm not a big sports fan, but this is a story everybody's talking about. Athlete, football player, Travis Hunter, big draft pick, the number one prospect. He was the number one prospect. Everybody was beaming about this guy. He made a commitment, a verbal commitment, to go to FSU down in Florida. This guy is the one. He's going to be the one. Everybody's watching this brother. He was supposed to go down to Florida, to the white schools, and or the white owned, or the white dominated, rather. But Travis, he made a verbal commitment, or, you know, he didn't sign anything. He didn't sign anything, but on draft day, on when it was time to get busy, our good brother, Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, flipped him and brought him over there to Mississippi. Brought him over there to Jackson State. And boy, people are crying foul right now. Boy, the dominant society is like, hold the hell on right now. Wait a damn minute. And boy, they are pissed. Well, they're gritting their teeth. They're so pissed right now. Boy, they are mad at Deion. Man, I love it. I love it. I love it. On signing day, boy, Deion flipped him, brought him over there to the HBCU. They were like, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. How did this nigga take his talent to another nigga coach in a nigga school? Oh, that's a no-no. Oh, that is a no-no. Whenever we have talent that the dominant society likes, part of the rule is we're never supposed to use our talent for other black people. Signing day, right, signing day. Signing, that's what I mean, signing. So listen, we're not supposed to use our talent for other black people, for our own folks. We're not supposed to use our talent to make the school hot. See, now you're going to make that black school hot. Now, Deion, you're making Deion shine even more as a coach. Yeah? Oh, you're not supposed to do that. Oh, they're pissed. And they're trying to say that Deion was making all types of deals, promising him money. Now, there's no proof of this. Nobody knows why. You know, the kid likes Deion, but they've been talking crazy about this. They're doing some I'm white and I say so. Did Deion offer this nigga money? You know, we have to investigate. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Florida State, boy, they lost a bag. See, they knew there was some money coming there. With this brother here, oh, the bag was going to come out there to the family. They make a grip off these brothers out here, man. They make a grip. So when you take your talent and you start benefiting black people as a black person, oh, it's a no. You're not supposed to do that. And we're the only people who are not supposed to benefit each other. Do y'all notice that? If an Asian person if they were an athlete and they say, hey, I'm going to take my talents to an Asian school, nobody would bat an eye. Hispanic person, hey, if I'm talented, I can play soccer and I want to take my talents to a Hispanic school, nobody would bat an eye. But a black person say, hey, I want to go to Deion, black coach in a black school. Oh, no, nigga. Wait a minute. You're doing something nefarious. Wait a minute. Oh, they're using all types of I'm white and I say so stuff. And down in Florida, some guy, who is this lawmaker or somebody? What's his name? It was a bill. And this happened like hours after Florida State lost the bid for our brother Travis. They start putting together a bill that would allow schools to facilitate those name, images, and likeness deals. The bill, which was filed hours after Florida State lost this top recruit to Jackson State, would strike language that prohibited schools from causing compensation to be directed to athletes. So now what they're doing now, right after this deal that went down, they're going back to change some rules now. Boy, they're hitting the drawing board immediately. I'm talking about hours after the situation. Boy, they're crying foul. They're trying to change laws and rules now already. Boy, the ink ain't dry. The dude ain't even in school yet, boy. They're changing the rules. This is how they do. Yes, we can't use our talent for ourselves. Yeah, they don't want black athletes getting paid off their talents, being able to go out here and do what they want to do and get black coaches to influence them to go to black schools. Now, they don't want that. And boy, they've been talking greasy on some of these sports talk radio shows. What's this one guy here? Doug Gottlieb. Let me play some of the audio of this guy. And a lot of people have been, you know, talking about him. Just listen to, you know, listen to the butthurt. I want y'all to just listen to the language they're using here. Listen to these folks. Hold on one second. Let me turn this up for you. And y'all excuse my audio, but hold on. Listen to this. Hold on.
Or the desire for people to see HBCUs succeed, and you just deal with actual logic, right? You have a kid who's from Georgia, could go to Georgia, incredible top 25 public institution, or go to Florida State, which is a top 50 public institution, right? Both are amazing schools. Both have gigantic alumni bases. Both are historically significant football programs. But he chose Deion Sanders, and look, if you're a cornerback, and Deion Sanders is easily the greatest cover corner of all time, I get that, I understand that. But you're signing up to play against a far inferior schedule with far inferior facilities. And, like, look, part of the deal is if the kid is really, really, really that good, right, he's 6'1", 165, you know, he's obviously over his next 3 or 4 years, he's going to have to put on, you know, 30-some-odd pounds of muscle. And, you know, with the training of Deion Sanders, like, why couldn't he be a great player? There's no reason he couldn't. But you pick your university on all of these factors, none of them, outside of Deion Sanders, are a factor that would make you want to choose Jackson State over Florida State, right? Because, ceiling? The ceiling is you play in the ACC, you play against the – a legit schedule, you could play for a national championship. You can't at the Division I level when you're at Jackson State. Additionally, you're not going to compete against the best in practice. You're not going to compete against the best in games. And while if you're talented enough, it doesn't matter. You should kind of break through. You're not exactly sharpening iron playing at Jackson State. Everybody knows that. The facilities... the rehab facilities, you know, Percy Miller, that's Master P's son, just left Tennessee State. There hasn't been a reporter who has retweeted the story that he left because his son got hurt and it felt like they had subpar medical facilities.
Oh, stop.
You know, all these people talking about that. I want so badly this to happen, this to succeed, when no one's actually giving money to the university or not enough to build it into a power as a football program. You can't do it without money.
Okay, well, that's where this is. This is where the money is coming in.
You can't do it with one dude.
Let me turn this off.
I get it. One guy puts a flag.
Okay, well, this is what we're doing. This is what they're bringing money to the school. This is what they're doing. With this deal, they're bringing money to the school. Yeah, don't complain about there not being money. There's not no money because all of the star players, they bounce. So now we get some star players up there. That's going to put more butts in the seats. That's going to bring more endorsements. That's going to bring more money. You understand? I love it. I love what our brother Deion is doing. Boy, they out here splaining. Well, Master P left because of the subpar facilities and inferior this and inferior that. Stop it. They're doing the right thing, and I take my hat off to Brother Deion. But we got to watch these folks, boy. When we start doing things where we start winning and we start bringing other black folks with us, because, see, they like for us to be the lone wolves. See, they like for us when we start, if we have any kind of potential, they have to get us away from other black people. When we have any kind of talent, we show any kind of potential, the name of the game is to peel us off. The name of the game is to isolate us. So when they isolate niggas, they can coon them out. See, they get you away from other black people. They can turn you into a big old coon. But see, if you're sitting up here, you're successful and you got a lot of potential and everybody's watching your moves and the money bag is about to start flowing in and you get around other black folks and you understand your blackness and you have a black consciousness, they're like, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, nigga. No, nigga, no. We cannot have that Negro. You understand? But they've always tried to change the rules on us whenever we do something successful, especially in the sports or gaming arena. You know, truth be told, even with the Negro Leagues, see, there was a reason why they had to sabotage the Negro League. That whole thing with Jackie Robinson and all that, that was really to take the money that was coming from the Negro League. The Negro League was making a lot of money. Understand, the Negro Leagues, that was its own cottage industry. And let's be very clear, you had some of the best players on the Negro Leagues. And what started to happen was that not only black people were watching these games, white people who wanted to see good players, they started watching some of those Negro League games too. So that's when the white supremacists went on alert. That's when they went on alert, like, hey, wait a minute. Whoa. We got these Negroes running their own league. Not only are they getting all the black dollars, they're starting to get some of these white dollars. See, I want y'all to understand how the game works. White people wanted to see those Negro League games too. White folks always trying to see what we got going on. They're always slumming with us trying to see what's going on. They call it slumming. But yeah, if they want to go get the action, they got to come around us. Just like in New York, a lot of those clubs, like those infamous, the Cotton Club that everybody likes talking about, the infamous Cotton Club that was in New York. I want folks to understand, the Cotton Club was a club that black people who weren't entertainers, black people couldn't go to it. Smack dab in Harlem. The Cotton Club was a club for white people. It was white people who owned the Cotton Club because white people would go down to Harlem and they would go to these little juke joints and all of these little after hour spots all the time. So white people said, well, hell, let's just build a legitimate joint so they can come and we can make money off this shit. Damn all of these niggas making money in these backwood gamble houses and the trap houses and the hoe houses. No, no. Let us white folks, let's build a club here in Harlem to get some of this damn money. Folks don't know that. The Cotton Club was a club that black people couldn't patronize for a long time. It was a club where black people were performing, but white people were the customers. And they were not sitting in there neck and neck, toe to toe with white people because this was Jim Crow. I want folks to understand Jim Crow was alive up there in New York too. Black people couldn't sit in the same facilities with white people like that. You understand? Yeah, the comedy clubs in South Central, of course, absolutely. So the dominant society, they've always been in our circles. The thing is, when we control the circles that they go to, that is a problem. When we control those circles that they go to, they don't want us making all that damn money. Just like with the rap game, by the way, too, with the hip hop game. When they saw how much money Sylvia Robinson of Sugar Hill Records and all of those other people, Bobby Robinson of Enjoy Records, when they saw all the money these brothers and sisters were making off this art form where the white people really didn't understand it, they thought, okay, this is some fad bullshit, it's going to die off. And they saw, no, it's not dying off. And then when you saw young black folks like Eazy-E and others starting their own labels as young people making all of this money, the white people really had to swoop in because they saw that it was white people buying these records now. When NWA came out, remember, those gangster rap records, these were white people buying these records. The majority of the people who bought those records were white. Even now, the majority of the people who buy rap records are white. That's why when you look at the Rolling Loud concerts, if you look at all these big festival concerts with rappers, it's damn near 80% white people in the audience. You understand? It's heavy. It is heavy. But the thing is, whenever we start doing things successfully and we start are outsmarting the folks in the dominant society. They go on alert heavy, and then they evoke the I'm white and I say so rule on us. See, that's their trump card. See, they know at the end of the day, they can talk in circles with us and play this little game, but they know if we get the best of them at the end of the day, they have their trump card, and their trump card is I'm white and I say so. There's a black man right now who's the top poker player in the world, one of the top poker players. It's a black man named Phil Ivey. Phil Ivey, I think he's originally from California, but he grew up in New Jersey. I think his family's Foundation of Black American, by the way, too. Good working class family, you know, good brother. And as a kid, this brother out there in Jersey, I think he started going to Atlantic City or something like that, but he started learning poker. He just became infatuated with poker. So he started studying poker, studying gambling, and just became a whip at it, just thorough with this shit. And this brother goes into casinos and he starts looking for weaknesses, the same way they look for weaknesses with the customers. You understand? He's what's called an advantage player. Well, see, they try to make it seem like he's a cheater. He's not a cheater. He's an advantage player. Yeah, they don't let Phil Ivey play in those real big tournaments no more, because they done labeled him a cheater. He's not a cheater. He's not going into these tournaments with any kind of trickery or any kind of machinery or any type of secret weapons or items that he's using. He's a smart dude who knows how to study his surroundings. See, this is why it's very important to study your surroundings. Our brother Neely Fuller talks about the importance of studying your surroundings. This is what the white supremacists do. We look at the white supremacists and see them studying everything, and we're like, oh, why are you studying that? They'll study a grain of sand. They'll study a crab at the bottom of the ocean. They'll climb the top of a mountain and study a leaf at the top of a mountain. And we're looking at them, okay, that's kind of petty and nitpicky. Well, why are you doing that? But no, that's a smart thing to do, because what they understand is studying their surroundings and understanding everything that's in the universe with them, they can use all of that to their advantage sooner or later. Knowing the ins and outs of everything in your environment, you will be able to use that to your advantage sooner or later. As a kid, I used to read encyclopedias all the time just to know stuff. My mom got me a little cheap encyclopedia, some used encyclopedias. I think somebody might have been selling them door to door, but I got some used encyclopedias, and I would read those things. I absolutely loved them because it was just random tidbits of information. I would just go down the A book, the B book, the C book, read about everything under the name A, aardvarks, anteaters, antelopes, avalanche, just everything. I just learned a little bit about everything, and that has helped me throughout my adult life. I know a little bit about everything, because then you can understand and you can control your environment better. Going into an environment and studying all the little nuances, every little thing around you, understand a little something about it. And I'm telling you that to show you how that works with our brother Phil Ivey. See, Phil Ivey, this brother goes into casinos and he knows how to study the little nuances of gambling tables. This dude knows how to study certain brands of cards. He done went and found out that certain brands, they have something called edge cutting or something like that, where you can tell what a card is just by the way it's cut. If you can look at it a certain way, the lines on them are different. This brother studies the back of cards and the brands. He studies the types of shuffling machines they use, and he has figured out how they shuffled the machines. This brother is thorough, and he goes into these casinos and uses all of these little tidbits of information to his advantage, and he whoops their asses, and they don't like it. They don't like it. But that's the game that the casinos play. See, the thing is, and all my people who go to Vegas, and I love Vegas, I have a great time when I go to Vegas, but when you go to Vegas, you know, Vegas, when you, the minute you walk into a casino, boy, they're waging war on your ass. There's a silent war being waged on you. they have an advantage on you, and they are constantly playing against you at that casino. They're setting you up to be at a disadvantage so they can win money off your ass. I want y'all to understand this. When you go to Vegas, especially, I haven't been to Atlantic City. I can only speak on Vegas. But when you go to Vegas, number one, there's lights everywhere. They make it pretty and festive. And that right there makes you relaxed. When everything is all fun, festive music, and just party time, you kind of let your hair down. Okay, cool. I can come here, relax, and have a good time. And they got halfway naked women walking around serving drinks all the time. So they're constantly distracting you. Also, and if you go to casinos in Las Vegas, they don't have any clocks anywhere because they don't want people to have any sense of time. They don't want you looking like, oh, damn, it's 8 o'clock. I got to get out of here. They don't want you thinking like that. When you go to a casino, there are no clocks in casinos. Also, in certain casinos, the ceilings, they have the ceilings painted like daylight. I know at the Paris Hotel and a few other ones, if you look up in the ceiling, it looks like daylight and clouds. So they flip your mentality so you don't know whether it's day or night. You don't know what time it is. You're just in this world of limbo where you're supposed to just throw your money out. Also, these people are walking around giving you free drinks all night. Half-naked women are walking up to you giving you free drinks. So, boy, they're playing your ass. They're getting you nice and loose. So when you hit those tables, you're not going to be focused and you're going to lose your money. They're constantly playing your ass. Now, when this brother goes in and he does the same thing, he goes in there and looks for the weaknesses, they cry foul. So this brother, Bill, he went to a couple of casinos and cleaned their asses out, almost cleaned them out. He went up there to London, one of them old casinos out there in London, and he went in there and finessed the shit out of them. He went in there, and this is the thing. He went in there, and he would call ahead of time saying, hey, I'm Phil. I want to come and play. I want to play big money, and I'm going to send you an advance. I'll wire you some money in advance, but I have some conditions. And usually for big players like that, they're like, cool, you got conditions, cool, we'll accommodate you because we're gonna get your money anyway, wink 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 wink. So they'll accommodate him. So he said, look, I got a couple of accommodations. I'm gonna wire you $1 million. I'm gonna come there and play, but this is what I need a certain brand of cards. Y'all got to use a certain card brand. Also, the shuffle machine, you got to use a shuffle machine, a particular one. They were like, okay, we'll do that. And he said, you got to have an Asian dealer at my table. And he did that because he brought his homegirl with him, and she was Asian. And she started speaking Mandarin to the guy, and she told the guy in Mandarin to place the cards down a certain way because my friend here is superstitious. So they went in there and finessed the shit out of him fair and square. So this dude went in there and I think he got like $7 million. He started lighting their asses up. He hit them so hard. They were like, you know what, nigga, we're not giving you the money. He went in there and finessed them fair and square. He didn't cheat. He didn't do anything illegal. He did not cheat. He just went in there on some advantage shit. He beat them, lit their asses up. And they say, you know what, nigga, we ain't giving you the money. You cheated. How did I cheat? Because we're white and we say so. Yeah, he was playing baccarat. Yeah, a baccarat, however you pronounce it. But yeah, he whooped their asses and they pulled the I'm white and I say so card on him. They were like, well, nigga, you cheated. How did I cheat? Well, we said you did. And they took him to court. He was going back and forth to court. Listen, yes, guys, he went to court and the judge said, yeah, it was cheating. Yeah, you cheated. So we're not going to give you the money. Yeah, they didn't want to pay the dude. They just pulled the I'm white and I say so and didn't pay him. You dig? And like, God, we're not going to let this nigga get over on us. This nigga then sat here and outsmarted us. They all got on code with each other. Was it? Yeah, it was $12 million in London. Yeah. It was $12 million in London. He finessed their ass fair and square. All he did was outsmart them. He didn't do anything illegal. He didn't cheat. No, when you play against these people who are playing against you, you're supposed to use everything to your advantage. And that's what he did. And they were like, nope, nigga, we got something called I'm white and I say so. they'll rearrange the rules when it comes to us. See, always remember that. Always remember that. They rearrange the rules when it comes to us. And yeah, that's that James Bond casino too, which really bothered them. Yeah, that's the casino that James Bond made famous. Yeah. But yeah, when we get an advantage, boy, they'll change the rules on our ass big time. So we got to stop letting people play these games on us. We got to stop letting people evoke the I'm white and I say so rule all the time. We got to shout that shit down. We got to stand up to that. And we got to stop letting people use all of this trick bag language with us. We got a real big bad habit of letting that happen. Y'all girl, speaking of that, Kamami, y'all girl Kamala Harris, they had something called the Freedmen's Conference, the Freedmen's Bank Conference or something like that. Hold on. I think it was called the Freedmen's Bank. The Freedmen Bank Forum. It was Kamala Harris and a lot of the Congressional Black Caucus people. Now, look at this. This is y'all girl right here. All right. The U.S. Treasury Department announced Tuesday the release of $8.7 billion to increase lending to small and minority-owned businesses and people living in poorer communities with limited access to banking. The funds come from the Emergency Capital Investment Program, which was created this year. It'll go to 186 community-based financial institutions, Vice President Kamala Harris said at the Freedmen's Bank Forum. Now, family, look at the headlines here. They sat here and had a forum about the Freedmen's Bank. The Freedmen's Bank was where our family guys, our foundational Black American ancestors, no damn minorities, it wasn't people of color, it wasn't people who were poorer, it was foundational Black Americans who put their money in the Freedmen's Bank, and the U.S. government, the federal government, allowed their money to be fleeced and taken away from them. That's why you and I had to struggle and suffer, because you and I, our family, they had their money stolen with the help of the damn federal government, ladies and gentlemen. So now, our family who suffered, they're saying that they're going to compensate minorities because of our family suffering. Minorities always means non-Black folks. I take grave issue with this. We got to stop letting these people use the suffering that foundational Black Americans specifically suffered to benefit all these other groups who did not suffer like our family did. I'm so tired of this bullshit game that they're doing, and Kamami Harris and others. I'm very offended by this. These are our family members who suffered, and they couldn't provide for us generationally like they could. They had to sacrifice and suffer because of the federal government, number one, enslaving them, and then taking their money after slavery. And now when it's time to produce compensatory justice, you're talking about giving the money to LGBT, white poor people, white Hispanics, white identifying Asians, who all have anti-Black hatred culturally against us. You understand? We have to shut that down. Not cool at all. And while these people are getting money, all of these different groups are getting money off the legacy and the suffering of our family, they're still pushing these fake Black crime narratives where Black folks are fake beating up Asian people. There was a video in New York. Lord, there was another video in New York of another Asian attack. Hold on. Where's that video? And this video is so ridiculous looking. Hold on, where's this video? I gotta find this video. Nah, I can't find it. Hold on. Let me find this video. This video was so clearly fake. Hold on, let me try to find this video. The dude had a do-rag on and a chain. Hold on, I'm looking for it now. Y'all bear with me. Where is it? Where? Hold on, I'm scrolling down my thing. I'm going to grab it for you. 1 second. I'm scrolling down. Okay, I hate when I don't have the stuff ready. Oh, here it is right here. Okay, let me put this on the screen. Now, right here, guys. Now, look at this. So they got this dude allegedly attacking an Asian woman. So let me, this is something from Central Casting. They made, look, they made sure he has a do-rag and a chain on, just so you wouldn't think it was an East Indian or a Puerto Rican or anybody like that. They made sure to put a 1999 do-rag on him and make sure his gold chain is out, looking like a stereotype. So he just randomly walks out of nowhere, says a so-called Asian epithet, and attacks a random Asian woman for no reason at all. Family, do y'all believe this is real? Look at this. He come, hey, sucker, what you doing here, jive sucker? You better eat my fist. Come on, dude. And what's interesting, this woman is just, she just happens to be standing here in a dark area by herself. There's nobody else around. This woman is just standing here by herself. Where in New York is it this empty, by the way, guys? Where the hell in New York is anything this empty? Yeah, somebody said he looks Dominican. Where in New York is this empty? Is this empty in New York? She's standing right in front of a camera. This dude runs in front of a camera and just socks her. She's just standing there on in an empty area. And Dolomite Jr. comes out. Hey there, sucker. What you doing in my neighborhood, jive turkey? Ah, you best to split. Here, yeah. Get out of here, dude. Get out of here. Come on, man. This is so damn staged. Give me a knife. Let me take some calls before I get out of here, because I promise I was going to take some calls from the family. Let me give y'all the number, family, before I go, because I got a lot of stuff to do with this film work. The number is 818-850-5404. 818-850-5404. Ladies and gentlemen, give me a call. Let me chop it up with the family. Let me see what's on your mind, ladies and gentlemen. Let me see what's on the family's mind here tonight. And by the way, hit that Amazon button to go get the book, Foundation of Black American Race Baiters. You can get that book right now. Let me get the phone calls going in. I know there's a little delay with the calls for a minute, but let me get y'all to call in 850-5404. There we go. Here's some callers calling in now. Let's see what's on everybody's mind. Let me see. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. What is your name, dear?
My name is Patricia.
Okay, you just made up a damn name. Were you scared to say what?
Yeah, I sure did.
Because you know your real name is Quoquo Nisha. So what? Why did you change your name, Quoquo Nisha?
I changed my name because my name is like unique and people know who I am.
You know I know you. What's your name?
My name is Danae.
Danae. Okay. So why are you trying to hide people from knowing who you are? Do you have some information that you're going to relay that you need to keep secret about your identity? Okay. So what's on your mind? What's on your mind?
I wanted to know, Tariq, personally, how do you feel as a whole of the plight of Black people? Do you think this is something that's ordained? I heard you once say you were a minister. I want to know, what's your opinion on your faith?
Yeah. Do I think our situation is ordained by who?
By God.
Now, why would
you think the situation is ordained by God?
Oh.
You know, like if you read the Bible, it's prophecy and everything. I just always wanted to know what you thought about that.
Okay, what is the prophecy of what we're dealing with now in the Bible? What did the Bible say about what we're dealing with now?
Well, I've heard our ancestors, you know, they served other gods and we were going to be, you know, paying for that generations to come. And it seems like it's something about the Black people here in America where we're constantly going through these things that's systematic against us from all other groups.
Okay, and why are we going through that?
I don't know. It makes me think it's something prophetic.
No, because when y'all talk like that, you're putting some type mm-hmm. of spiritual superiority over white people. You understand?
Okay.
And
yes, sir.
Yeah, when black folks got a very bad habit of doing that. Oh, this is the Lord. It's the Lord has said this. You're putting white people in a mm-hmm. God-like situation, and it's not like that. It's just a bunch of people mm-hmm. classified mm-hmm. as white who have a code against us, and they are not afraid to die to enforce their code. And the reason okay. why we're suffering is because we are afraid to die to fight the shit. That's all. It ain't ordained by mm-hmm. nobody. God doesn't ordain liars. The white supremacists right. are liars. God is not ordaining that. God is not ordaining no damn Kyle Rittenhouse. That's white supremacy right there. God doesn't ordain black folks getting shot in the back by these demonic white supremacists who turn around and then lie about it. That's not God. God wouldn't ordain that, or no superior spiritual being, because if they are a spiritual being of the earth, they should be just. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you for answering that, Tyreek. I've been watching you and following you for years, and I appreciate everything you do and everything, you know, how you discuss it. But I'm like, I felt your energy when you were like, I'm so tired of this, because I am too.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, we got
so tired of it.
Yes, indeed. But we can't put it on the Lord. The Lord gave us right. everything we need to stop this nonsense. You understand?
Yes, he did. Man. Yes, yes.
Did you get my book?
Thank you so much.
Have you gotten my book yet, dear?
It's going to be my Christmas gift, because my best friend is getting it for me. That's what I asked her for.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, dear. All right.
Yes, always. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Family, bye-bye. Listen. Listen, family. Listen. Hold on. Let me turn the phones off a minute. Family, listen. These people, the dominant society, the white supremacists, it's not no spiritual ordainment or anything. It's just scared niggas. Let's just keep it a buck. Niggas are scared. Family, we could stop white supremacy overnight. Oh, yes, we can. We can stop white supremacy over damn night. Niggas just don't want to. Dr. John Henry Clark talks about how we get right at the doorstep of freedom and then turn around. See, that's what we're really afraid of. See, because we can handle the white supremacists. What we're really afraid of is black people. Let's keep it a buck. What we're really afraid of is going back running the show ourselves. That's what we're really afraid of. We're afraid. A lot of black people are afraid of running the show on their own. Because, see, we've been so used to being in a childlike state. White folks tell us what to do, and we just go to work and we have parties on the weekend. That's kind of a fun thing now. If we're running everything, we can't be partying like that no more. We got to start working. And black people who are entrepreneurs, you know what I'm saying? Entrepreneurs, we don't have weekends. If we want to have fun, we'll make fun time. But for the most part, we're working, we're building. A weekend don't mean shit. In fact, we don't really like weekends because we ain't making no money. Our businesses are closed, so we ain't got it cracking like we're supposed to. Entrepreneurs, all of you business owners, we ain't really tripping on no damn weekend. The weekend is like, damn, I wish Monday come back. Shit, I'm trying to get it in. Our weekend is Monday, when some productivity can start happening. You understand? So a lot of people who are used to partying, I get told what to do and I get me a little salary. I don't really have to think that hard. I just go in here and I can just daydream all day and still get my little check. I go to work and I get to be on my Instagram posing and take me a couple of selfies in my nursing uniform. And then Friday, boy, I get to turn up and show my ass and go to the club and then go to church Sunday and then Monday do it all over again. That's a cool existence to a lot of people. They don't want to change that. Now, when we have to start building the facilities and wiring the electricity and doing all the ins and outs of everything, that's a big task. lot of folks don't want that responsibility. Like right now, I'm doing a movie right now. Boy, every little detail I have to do. Let me tell you what I've done this week. Just this week alone. This week alone, we didn't had a production meeting with the crew. Earlier this week, we went to the filming location to do a walkthrough, to go over all the shots. Then I had to make sure the storyboard was correct. Then I had to hire some extra wardrobe people. Then we had to go sign all the documents for the wardrobe and then pick the wardrobe out. Then we had to go get some of the other accessories for the film. Then we had to go get insurance, and that was a whole day taking care of the insurance, going back and forth with that. Then we had to hire some more people, some more PAs for the shoot. We had to screen them. We had to get another first AD. We had to screen them. We had to go over everything with them. Then we had to go over the casting list. So that ain't fun. That's not turn up time, because nobody gets to see you do that. See, black folks, we got into this habit is that we don't like to do nothing unless somebody can see us. If ain't nobody looking at us, what ain't nothing fun if we ain't getting some damn attention. Yeah, bossing up ain't easy, dude. It's a lot of work. And see, we're so used to getting attention, we think just going out the house and letting niggas see us, that's all life is about. If you are a business person, you ain't thinking about being seen. You're somewhere in the warehouse, in your business, in your bedroom, or in your office, grinding, nose to the grindstone, you crunching numbers, you handling business. The last thing on your mind, if you are a black person who is an entrepreneur, is somebody looking at your ass. You see, when you think like that, you're different. A lot of black folks don't want that. Let's keep it a buck, man. A lot of black folks don't want that. I want to be on the gram showing out. I need some shine. I need people looking at me. That's what it boils down to. We could get rid. White supremacy could end overnight. That's not hard to do. But building and running things, that's the thing that black folks have a problem with. Building things and running things. Who's going to control the telecommunication apparatuses? Who's going to control the satellites? And I've talked about this scenario before. Let's pretend that there's no more white people. Let's just say there was a disease that came through and wiped white people out. We didn't do it, but a disease came through, which could possibly happen because white people's numbers are very limited and low right now. And they understand that. That's why the COVID thing, you know, kind of threw them off. They had to contain that because they can't be in a position where their numbers are already low and there's another outside airborne threat. They dealt with that in Europe during the bubonic plague and the Justinian plague. They've already dealt with plagues that had wiped them out and damn near made them extinct in Europe. They've dealt with that for centuries. You understand? So let's say something happened and all the white people, they just got wiped out. What are you going to do, black folks? When there's no more white people, what are you going to do, black people? All those satellites in the air making your cell phone work, do you know how to keep those satellites in the air? Because see, they've kept us out of those rocket science schools like that. See, we've been denied access to certain levels of education. So we have to start thinking in those terms. Who's going to take care of that? Who's going to take care of the electricity? Who's going to take care of the water flow? See, we have to start. That ain't glamorous no more. That ain't about attention. That ain't about twerking and shaking your ass. That ain't about popping it and busting it open. You understand? We got this thing where we just have to be seen. Life is about being seen. And that's the thing that scares us. When there's no more white people, that means ain't no more goof-off culture. Because see, we didn't create a culture of goofing the fuck off all the time. There's a time and place to let your hair down and have fun. But we didn't make that a whole culture just goofing off all the time. White mommy and white daddy would take care of the heavy lifting. I'm here to turn up and party. Everything has been flipped into turn up and party time. And we got to be very real about that. And we have to get off that. We have to say, hey, enough is enough. We're going to have to handle some business out here. as Black folks, we're going to have to step this thing up and start thinking about community building and nation building. Because notice, whenever we start talking about community building and nation building, what do we have? We got niggas hating on it. Look at all the hate we got because of the damn museum. And we're still getting the museum together. But look at all the hate we got because of a damn museum. We're trying to build a museum and niggas hating. There's a liquor store in every corner. Nobody's talking about that. But we're talking about building a museum and niggas was hating on the damn museum. And still are. You understand? So we have to understand the game out here. And we have to not be afraid of being nation builders. We have to not be afraid of that. There's nothing wrong with trying to build a nation, ladies and gentlemen. I want y'all to think about that. Let me get up out of here. That's been today's episode of Tariq Radio. I will be back on Sunday, so y'all stay tuned. You guys go to Amazon right now to get the brand new book, Foundation of Black American Race Beta. Very good book you need to get. Very good book you need to get, especially for the holidays. And I will holler at you guys Sunday. Y'all be good.